You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Attention sports fans. Are you a fan of an NFL team? Would you love to attend your favorite team's Week 1 game? Well, you're in luck. Fans First Sports Network is giving away 4 free tickets to the Week 1 NFL game of your choice, up to $5,000. The rules to enter are simple. Step 1, go to contest.fansfirstsports.com. That's contest.fansfirstsports.com, and fill out the appropriate information. Step 2, find us on Facebook, Fans First Sports Network, and like our page. That's it. Once you've done that, you've officially been registered to win the 4 free tickets to any Week 1 NFL game. What are you waiting for? Go enter for your shot at seeing your favorite team in action. Contest ends on September 4th.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded, top 25, under 25, and we're at top 1. And I'm not sure who's more drained of my voice, you or me. I am super excited though, because I am joined today by John Liu from formerly TSN Montreal. But nowadays we find you over in the western side of Canada and Winnipeg.
Coming up on a year now, Patrick. It's hard to believe that time's flown by so fast. But yeah, I'm loving it being back in my hometown.
And I want to be honest here, because we're not going to do the feed, but I am the one wearing the shirt today. And you know, I think this is the only time I will ever outdress John, because John, you really took it to next level in your interviews and intermission protocols of the Habs games. I mean, you were the person that took over from Sean Bellew being best dressed in the Bell Center.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I think that's the only area where maybe I could be mentioned in the same breath as Mr. Beliveau. So, and when you said that, I was like, whoa, hang on a sec, you know? Okay. No, but that I'll accept. Thank you.
I was thinking you would wear that, you know, hoodie jacket that you had, that you got made after having been in Sweden for a while. But yeah, it's before we start on your top 25 on 25 list, how much do you follow Montreal nowadays?
I still read a lot of the content that's on Twitter. Sorry, I just can't call it that
other
alphabetic
thing.
Letter. It just sounds stupid. And my colleagues with the Athletic and Sportsnets. I subscribed to the NHL package this past season because I wanted to keep watching the Canadians, and my friends and former colleagues on the TSN broadcast, Brian Mudrick, and my replacement, Kenzie Lalonde, see how she was doing. I've still kept pretty close tabs on the Canadians, not spending as much time, of course, because my responsibilities are with the Winnipeg Jets and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But no, certainly I'm always going to have a soft spot for the team that I covered for as long as I did. And the city that I lived in, the markets that I was very proud to serve. So I still follow them pretty closely, but not as much as before.
What do you miss most about Montreal? Is it the food or is it the culture?
It's a little bit of both, because Montreal is such a unique place that anybody who's been there knows that there's a buzz, there's a pulse, there's Quebec is the most unique part of North America, in my view, simply because it's like a transplanted part of Europe stuck in the middle of the continent. And so I was really grateful for being able to spend 15 years there and taking in the culture and getting to really understand what Quebec and Quebecers are all about. And of course, covering the most storied franchise in the NHL, well, and largely professional sports. And so it was a tremendous experience. There's certain elements that I miss, like the cuisine and just in Montreal, the fun finds you. Okay. In other parts of the world, like my hometown, Winnipeg gets a bad knock for not being as cosmopolitan or having as much of a nightlife as many other places in North America. But to me, it's like, I grew up here. My circle is here. And so it's like, I don't have to go looking for fun. It will find me here too, because this is my crib. But Montreal is a different animal in that way, that it's a very spontaneous and very vibrant city in that regard too. So I do miss some of those elements. Although having said that, I'm told that it's been a really rainy summer in La Province, so I don't miss that because it's been dry and warm here in Winnipeg for the most part, and no mosquitoes, almost no mosquitoes.
Don't tell my missus that because she will move directly because it's been atrocious this season here in Sweden as well.
Oh.
We have a roof on the patio and we've been sitting there thinking we're at a caravan vacation more or less because it just smatters on the roof all the way through. But yeah, no mosquitoes. That's what we have in common probably.
Beautiful.
I asked you when I asked you to join us here and thank you again for joining us. It's super exciting. I'm feeling a little bit out of my depth, but with such a professional as yourself, I asked you to do a your own top 25 under 25 rankings and I showed you the criteria that we had and you came together with a great list. How long did it take you?
I'd say probably I did the list, compiled the list over the course of about 5 or 6 days since we made contact, Patrick. And please, I hope you don't feel out of your element. We're just having a conversation. To be honest with you, some of it is just my own pre-existing knowledge and familiarity with the Canadians' prospects, especially the ones that I covered in Montreal. A lot of it is based on reputation or researching what scouts are saying, what other of my colleagues and experts who follow the Canadians much more closely, what they're saying, because a lot of them I haven't had the benefit of watching firsthand, whether on ice or on television. And so so some of it I have to admit that I'm plugging holes a little bit, but for the most part, I feel like I had a pretty good sense of, who b deserves to be on that list and where they should be ranked.
Yeah, and it's more or less what we all do because it would be a full-time job to follow every prospect of Montreal Canadiens anyway. But and especially if you take it up to under 25 because then you're going to have NHLers on there as well.
Of course.
You listed at number 25 Caden Primo and I'd be honest, I had him very, very low in my own rankings because I felt like we passed him now. The trajectory has stagnated. But what are your thoughts on Primo having him on the list?
I feel like that there still is game in Caden Primo, that he has had such a rough development path. I mean, we saw what happened to him during and through the pandemic, and that really seemed to hurt his chances of becoming a high caliber NHL prospect. But I still feel that there's raw talent there, there's ability, and who knows, he might only be a tweener. He might just continue to be a Laval farmhand. Although having said that, I think that he'd probably move on before that became his future, simply because I'm sure that he wants more opportunity or wants a chance to prove himself. Maybe he needs a change of scenery. But having said that, I think that's if you're talking about the prospect pool as a whole, yes, the Canadians are kind of thin in the goaltending department as far as who's on the farm. But if you take a look farther down the line, maybe he still wants to have a place in the organization. Maybe he has the opportunity to be a 1B, like when we see tandem starters right now, that's becoming more the trend in the NHL, that maybe there's a place for Caden Primo to be a guy who starts about 35 to 40 games a season and still deliver at a sufficient level that makes him, I guess, a valuable prospect within the organization. And that's where I based it on, simply because if there were prospects in the pool like Carey Price, for instance, well, Caden Primo wouldn't be on that list at all because your goaltending pool would be very, very sound. But having said that, the guys that the Canadians have between the pipes that are prospects, that they're not as proven, they're younger, they're not as experienced. And so we don't know exactly what they have. And so to that end, I think that Primo still has value in the organization, but I just didn't put him, I didn't feel that he was deserved to be, in my eyes, higher than where I put him.
And he has that playoff performance where he was outstanding, but that's really the only thing that stands out. You have Struble at 24. You have Ilonen, who signed a contract just now at 23, starting to become, with a deeper prospect pool, as we're going to go through, also a little bit redundant maybe and replaceable at least.
Right, and that's why I ranked Ilonen lower, is simply because there are so many good forwards, young forwards in the on the farm and in the hopper, that's he hasn't been able to really seize his opportunities and make the most of them. And so he is getting passed by a lot of players on the depth chart. But again, some of these guys that I have put on there that's that may seem like they don't have as much potential as they might have when they were drafted or when they were 1 or 2 years in the organization, is because they do have some experience, right? And a lot of these kids that are still in junior or playing in college, yes, they're putting up good numbers. They show potential, but until they actually get a taste of pro experience, not necessarily the NHL, but AHL is such a tough league too, that until they actually show what they're able to do or what they can do at a pro level, we don't really know what they're going to be. They might slip down the depth chart a year or two from now. And that's why guys like Ilonen and that's that do have some pro experience, both the N and the A, I believe that they still are on the Canadiens' radar as prospects with value attached to them.
We don't want to wish anyone ill, but injuries happen. We saw that with Ikonen 2 times in a row. He got knee injuries, and the one was the second one was obviously because of the recovery process hadn't finished yet or healed up properly yet, and that can derail a career as well. Obviously, Ikonen has a decent hockey career in Europe, but you don't get to the NHL automatically just because you have a good junior hockey career.
Absolutely. You got to prove it. Look at the World Juniors. How many guys don't make it? Yeah, there are plenty of stars, but look how many, the majority don't make it. They never make it, right?
Yeah.
So,
Or the NCAA basketball tournament. Same thing.
So, yeah.
You have Heinemann at number 22. We had him at 21. Fantastic shot. I don't know if you've seen it, but he comparable to Olofsson in Buffalo, a little bit more pace on it, a little bit more heavy hitter. And coming in last year, really adapting well to the North American style of hockey.
Yeah. Now, there's a guy that I admit that I haven't seen much. I've only read about him. And so I struggled with where I wanted to place him on the list. And so just because I'm unfamiliar with him, but he hadn't really made a strong impression, a guy that obviously will need more experience, I rated him a little bit lower. But that's a guy that, well, again, you know, any of these acquisitions that Kent Hughes had brought in through some of the trades that he made once he took over, you know, you really want to see these guys succeed, because it a Heinemann or a Smolanic, they're not going to be legacy acquisitions by any means, simply because Kent Hughes was trying to, let's be frank, that he was trying to clean house from the moment that he took over. And so,
and you have to take a contract back sometimes as well.
Sure. Yeah. But the prospects that he was getting, you like to think that, okay, well, they did get some good bat draft picks. They weren't looking for players. They weren't looking for NHL bodies because they're just not at that stage of the team's developmental track. But the young guys that they do bring in, have brought in, you hope that they will turn into something valuable for the organization in short order or down the road.
Obviously, Jacob Dobich comes in at number 21. That goalie prospect that we have a little bit higher right now, along with what Montreal drafted this year in Fowler as well. Two interesting names, and one of them that will probably get a chance, Dobich, in AHL and compete for that spot with Primo, which is going to be an interesting battle going on through the season, is probably the word. Then I have a beef with you having Engström at 20. The Eyes on the Prize community had him quite high. He ended up at 12 in total. Obviously, you haven't watched him, and that's fine.
And that's why, full disclosure, I have not seen Engström play in person or on television. And so I don't feel like I have an informed enough opinion to rank him as high as you guys have, because you have the benefit of seeing him You know, you've got much more familiarity with him. But again, that's a guy that I feel that does certainly have value for the organization, that he has an opportunity to make an impact. But just of the guys that I have seen play in junior or college games that I have ranked higher than him, that's just my own personal experience or bias, if you will, that's coming through here.
Yeah, no, and Engström, obviously, you didn't watch the World Juniors when he fell on the post to deny Kapanen the goal between Sweden and Finland.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't catch that, to be honest with you, Patrick.
Oh. That's probably the smartest play Sweden has done since we won the Olympics in Torino. So, but yeah, no. The interesting name, I think, you have Mashar at 19. We had him at 18. Kidney the other way around, 19 and 18 for you. But you rate Mishak quite high, and I can understand that. And he's still so young,
Right? And he has experience. You know that he has higher level experience, and by virtue of his age, than some of the other junior players that he's clustered in around, like in my rankings and others of your contributors and of your staff. And so I believe that Mishak still has that there is a gear in his development that he's yet to hit that I think that still makes him a good prospect. But you know what? Again, the Canadians are stocking their cupboards so extensively that he's a guy that he easily could get passed on the depth chart if he doesn't find that other gear in his development. But I just think that at this stage that there are offensive prospects that, you know, that he does have the edge on, and that's simply because of age and experience. But, you know, watch out for all the guys that are around him because, you know, the future is looking very bright for the Canadians.
I can see Mishak being one of the guys being sent in a deal somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little bit like, you know, what we got back in different deals when Montreal wants to include something extra, you can toss Mishak in there.
Mm-hmm. Or he becomes a tweener.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of, well, not a lot, but I mean, several. Well, we're talking about 25 players, so they can't all make the 23-man roster. So there's going to be a notable number who will become tweeners or won't be part of the organization for sure, right?
There are also a couple of older guys on the team already that is not listed in this list either. So, so you know, it takes a bit to kick someone of that caliber out from that 100%. Roster spot as well. Just a small reminder to lower the volume as we're going to go to an ad break, and you can hear more from John Liu after these messages.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
And we'll get back to the podcast right now. Interestingly, you hit the nail on the head with Mayu. We know Mayu has fantastic offensive upside.
Right.
His defense, though, and how, I don't know how much you watched him and how much you've heard through your contacts, but obviously we have Lane Hudson on the list later on.
Right.
Can you have a team with two so offensive-minded defenders?
I think that with Mayu, the growth in his game is to become more of a two-way defenseman, and he does have some edge, and so he brings a couple of elements or potential elements to the table. And the old cliche about you can't teach size, that a guy that his size that's that mobile, if he fills out his game, rounds out his game on the defensive side, and plays with a little bit of edge, that could make him a very, very an extremely valuable member of the blue line for a long time. And I think that's why the Canadians made that very untimely decision to draft him. And we know that there would have been other NHL franchises that would have done the same, even though he had said, don't draft me prior to his eligibility year. And I don't want to branch out into an extended conversation about the the journey that Mayu has been on. But I just think that if we're talking about him purely as a prospect, I think that he has high value for the organization. And honestly, I had him ranked lower until just a few days ago when the NHL reinstated him. You know, I thought that, well, when is this going to reach its conclusion or resolution? But now that it has, I bumped him a few spots up because I really think that if he does reach his full potential, he could be a very valuable defenseman for the organization, even in the context of Lane Hutson being a guy that's going to, that could be an absolute superstar.
One of our guests, Brock Otten from McKean's Hockey, mentioned also that the tactical play of the London Knights is not very suitable to Mayo's kind of style of play either. That would probably, you know, magnify his defensive weaknesses, if we should use that word. And it's a good podcast for you guys that just catching up with us. Go and check out the Mayu podcast, because Brock Otten has a very, very deep understanding of the OHL and the journey that Mayu has taken on the ice in regards to his development. The player that is generated the most comments in the whole section on this list is obviously Arber Šekaj. We all love the story. We love the intangibles that he brings to the team. It's something for the average Joe of us fans that someone can come off the street and into Montreal Canadiens and actually play for them, and that we all love. But where do you see him? Can he reach that second pairing and make his position a little bit more stable, or will he be on that third pairing maybe for the rest of his life and maybe a journeyman in NHL?
Yeah, I think that I see him mainly as a depth defenseman, third pairing, simply because, again, when you talk about the intangibles, that's what makes him such a compelling prospect, right? That there are very few players in the NHL that do what he does. Like, even though fighting is it's becoming a less relevant, less common aspect of the game, but intimidation will never stop being part of the game, right? So whether that's the Canadians being the aggressors or the ones trying to answer the challenge, a player like Arber Šekaj still feels a role on a team, because you can't have just 23 fancy dancers, right? That's just not hockey at the professional level, you know?
It is in Russia.
Yeah, but how many people watch that league, right? I just feel like Šekaj, I think what his challenge will be is to make sure that as the game gets faster and more skilled, which that's the way it's going, that he's not a plug. That's the thing, is that for a man his size, he has pretty decent mobility. I'm not talking like Lane Hutson mobility, but just for a guy his size, his the way he uses his feet, his skating ability, and he has pretty decent hands too. I think that combination of skill sets, in addition to the intangibles, are what make him such a compelling character. And I believe that if he can become a bit of a power, a penalty killing specialist, then that just, I'd see that as a role that would really, really help his longevity in the league. And as he gets more experience, I believe that they will extend those responsibilities to him, because it just makes him more valuable. Yes, he may be a third pairing defenseman, more of a depth guy, but if he becomes a very good penalty killer, then that makes him even more valuable to the team, in addition to the other elements of his game and skill set that he brings to the table. So, but again, it's like, I don't feel that he is higher than, any higher than where I had placed him, simply because we have to be realistic about the fact that this guy is, you know, as a free agent that really kind of came out of nowhere, and isn't going to fall anywhere close to the mold of a modern NHL defenseman. But still fills a valuable role with enthusiasm and willingness. Yeah, he does have value to the organization within the top 25 for certain.
I like the fact that you point out maybe that the development should go towards a box play specialist, as we say here in Europe, and thereby also maybe increasing his defensive acumen 5-on-5, because mm-hmm. that's where he struggles a little bit. And if he can improve that, improve on the PK, and then he could be more safer, even if he ends up on the third pairing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Joshua Roy, Owen Beck, Farrell. I see the trend here, as you mentioned, Rafael Harvey-Pinard, the youngsters coming in, the juniors with high ceilings but hasn't really proven themselves in their pro seasons yet. Mm-hmm. Topping out that list a little bit, you know, different from what we had him, Lane Hutson. And most of us are just pissed that he didn't get the Hobie Baker Award this year.
Yeah. At least Cole did.
Well, he has another year. He'll get it this year because I think the riot from Montreal would just spread down to Boston if they don't give him it. Such an interesting prospect, even 100%. In regards to his size, but the skill is undoubtedly there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. I mean, he has that Adam Fox type quality, right? And the size. It's like, well, from the time that he was drafted, that his camp went out of its way to say that his physiology, that the condition that he had, that he was going to still grow, and we've seen it.
Yeah.
So that was something that's they went out of their way to make sure that it wouldn't hurt his draft potential too much. But at least, okay, at least the Canadians, they took a chance. And when you look at his college career so to date, that kid is so compelling. Like his puck skills, his vision, his creativity, his skating. Yeah. He's fun to watch. But again, how that translates to the pro level, really would like to see him in the AHL first, when guys are going to be trying to crush him.
That podcast is also something to go back to, I think, and it's Will Bell Fraser covering the Terriers for Boston University. But also, interestingly for me, a player I followed is Tom Villander coming into Boston University, and I'm a little bit sad that Montreal didn't draft him as well. But if you get the chance this season, watch a Boston University game with those two defenders on the ice, because it's going to be five forwards on the ice. You have Newhook, newly acquired from the Avalanche, two second round draft picks more or less for him. Is that the NHL pedigree, the Stanley Cup pedigree that puts you there?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, when you know, to harken back to my earlier point, we're talking about Meshack, same thing. You know, the Newhook has NHL experience on a very good team in an extremely good organization. And so I just take a look at what the Canadians have done with Kirby Dach and feel like that's because Kent Hughes is so familiar with Alex Newhook. And not just having been the agents, but, you know, just there's a profound level of connectivity. Just also, I mean, we've seen it with Hughes, like having been a coach, having, you know, just having been a hockey lifer, that when he identifies a player like this, and when he does a deal of this nature, even though it's early in his tenure, it just seems like he really has a lot of that there's an extremely profound level of research and knowledge that's gone into that transaction, that they really believe in this guy and feel like he's the type of player that can that can reach his full potential under Marty St. Louis. And so when he made that deal, I thought, because I remember when Newhook was a draft prospect, he was barely high on the list. People thought he was going to be a star, a guaranteed star, and it just hasn't panned out that way. But having said that, again, somebody with that potential, like Dach, well, Newhook without the same types of injury issues, but with the potential that he has, with a change of scenery in an organization that's led by a guy that he knows very well, with a coach who's all about development and helping players reach their potential, I just really believe that Newhook is going to follow a similar path to what was seen through Dach. Hopefully Dach can stay healthy, you know, this year and next year and moving forward in his career. And like to say the same about Alex Newhook as well. So that when they made that deal, I was very excited about the possibilities of what he could do for that organization too.
And you're starting to see this development team, and mainly Adam Nicholas is getting all the credits, but we have Marie-Philippe Poulin there. We have, Martin Saint-Louis coming in with his credibility and his skills. It feeds this positive spiral that if he can do it, I can do it. And if he gets better, I can get better. And they push each other along, and they have that brain trust to go with it and help each other out and help players out. I'm really, really interested in see where this is going down the line. Speak about the line down the line. Jordan Harris, number 8. Justin Barron, number 7. And interestingly enough, you obviously hit the nail on the head, more or less, with David Reinbacher at number 6. We have him at number 7. This year's draft pick, with the old friends in the media and what you all saw in Canada, what did you think about the pick?
I heard the buzz that they were very interested in him. So it didn't surprise me when they picked Reinbacher. And I guess there's always that risk when you draft for need, as teams have done over the years, and it hasn't worked out. But when you consider what's in that kid's toolbox, and a big right shooting defenseman that skates well, that has, physical elements to his game, for the Canadians to invest that high in somebody that fills a positional need, that, again, really speaks to the value that they believe this kid holds. And that's why I ranked him high. Even though he doesn't have any pro experience.
You're going to get half of Switzerland on you now, right now.
Well, sorry. I mean, yeah. Okay. I hope that doesn't sound biased. I'm talking like AHL.
I know. But
yeah. But
he's playing against men. He's done it for 2 years. There is a lot of data, and obviously Montreal Canadiens has that data, and they have their own data. Me personally, and I know our listeners know this, I think it's probably the fourth best league in the world at the moment. So it's a high level league still.
Then that adds credibility to the belief that they have in him as a prospect, that they felt that he deserved to go that high, right? So, really excited to see what he's capable of doing, simply because, and also, wasn't it that he, during the development camp, I just sort of caught bits and pieces of development camp, but didn't he form like a really instant rapport with Lane Hutson?
Yeah, I've said it and I've written it, and I can tell you as well, I think that you mentioned drafting for need, and I think they saw this complementary player to Lane Hutson. It might not have been the sexy pick, as I said, right? But it's the pick that makes the sexy pick from last year even better.
Well, you know what? And I feel so bad for Reinbacher that certain fans crapped all over him immediately because they thought that the Canadians should have drafted Michkov. And he didn't ask to be drafted,
He's an 18-year-old kid.
Come yeah, on, just like Logan Mailloux, he said, don't draft me. And they drafted him. It's like, it's not the kid's fault in these situations. So back off and let him develop. Let him become what he's meant to be under the circumstances, right?
And give him that, feeling of how fantastic Montreal and Montreal Canadiens can be. So he wants to come here and he wants to show 100%. Us all, what he can be at the best of his level, and I think he will be a really, really, really good player. One of those cornerstones, actually. I think he can be, maybe not the flashiest, but a cornerstone doesn't have to be flashy either. It just has to be stable and there.
Well, and the flash could be on the left side there with that pairing.
Indeed. One prospect that I think is very interesting, you placed him at number 5, Juraj Slafkovský. You obviously seen him a little bit when he's played Winnipeg and all that. How do you think his transition into the NHL has been?
Hard to really give a fair assessment, simply because the long-term injury that he suffered, right? But from what I did see of him, I saw a kid who was hesitant to make mistakes. And I think that goes along with the expectations and the scrutiny that comes with being a number 1 pick, especially by the Montreal Canadiens, drafted in Montreal. Right. And again, with the reaction where some thought it's like, oh, why didn't you take the consensus pick?
Yeah.
You know, the Canadian center. No, just after I got a chance to get to know Slafkovský a little bit, you know, whether through interviews or speaking to people in the organization, it's like, oh, okay, I really get why they like this guy. You know, that he seems like the type that can deal with pressure, and that will want to embrace pressure. That you look at the raw materials that he has, the size, the hands, the shots, the ability to box out, to protect the puck when he's playing with confidence, like he did in the Olympics, World Championship. There's an awful lot to like about him. And I just thought that, honestly, maybe he should have been in the AHL to start the season last year, or at least part ways into it. Don't burn the first year of his entry level, you know, let him dominate in the big league, because even though he's huge, the kid is an absolute monster. The guys were going after him, right? And he had to adjust to that element of the North American game, where he was going to be a target, and he would have been in the AHL for sure, right? But at least he would have learned very quickly that it's like, okay, you got to keep your head up. Don't cut into the middle of the ice with your head down, and you know, all those nuances that, you know, especially for a big guy that's going to get tested, that he would have been able to, I guess, put his feet in the pool a little bit more extensively and sooner. But having said that, hopefully his rehab has gone well, and that he's going to come to training camp strong, healthy, you know, having added elements to his game that'll make him more prepared for his sophomore season, and that we'll see a little bit more of a season that'll give a fair assessment about where his progress is headed, right? Because honestly, it's like, go back to the draft day when Kent Hughes says, we're not interested in what he is at 18, like today, right? We're interested in what he's going to be at 21, right? Yeah. They recognize he's going to be a project, and he could be a dominant project at that. Like, can you imagine if he turns out to be like a Tage Thompson? Well, then a lot of people can be eating their words.
Yeah, you know? For sure. And I think also, you know, you mentioned coming from abroad and all that, but Finland, the Finnish system is also a very strict system. And coming in there to the NHL and adjusting to speed, to well, maybe not as much rink size, because Finland has a few different rink sizes, and they even have a shorter rink for one reason. I don't know, energy bill or something probably. this is a kid I'm really fond of. I like his attitude as well, and if we speak about audacity when it comes to Lane Hudson, having the guts to say, you know, there is a spot opening between Suzuki and or next to Suzuki and Caulfield on draft day. That's you know, it takes a lot of guts to say that in Montreal.
He has a lot of panache in his personality, and I think that's when he gets more confidence and more comfort with his game, I think Montreal is going to love him, because he just has a really sparkling personality.
I know you're on a short leash here, John, so I'm gonna run through the next three names on the list. It's Dach at 4, Gouley at 3, Caulfield at 2, and obviously you have Suzuki at number 1. What can you tell us that has seen Suzuki develop over the last couple of seasons into that captain that Montreal maybe has craved for a couple of years?
I think that last season spoke for itself with the way he carried himself as captain in his first season, and with the Canadiens suffering as many injuries as they did to so many key players, where they ended up and with their record. And yes, we saw Nick's performance or his numbers dip a little bit, I guess about a third of the way into the season. But having said that, he still managed to come with a consistent effort, and he didn't hang his head. He just kept going about his business, doing the best that he could, revolving door on his line or on his wings. And leading by example. And it's like just that type of attitude. And we've known that about Nick for a real long time, since he came into the organization, that he's just a really good, solid young man. Like you don't find much better character than him. And the skill speaks for itself. Like we saw it right away. It continues to grow and hone itself. But I just think that he availed himself incredibly well as a captain of the Montreal Canadiens in his first season under the circumstances. And so that's why, in my mind, there's absolutely no question that he is their number one prospect or their number one player under 25.
Indeed. And I would have, there is this question that lingers a little bit around Montreal and around the fans and sometimes in my head as well. Is he really that first line center that Montreal will need to hoist that cup, or is that something that Montreal is still looking for? I'm thinking about someone with, you know, three letters coming out of Winnipeg for a few years, and you know.
Well, I'd say that Patrice Bergeron was not the flashiest center, right? He was just incredibly strong at both ends, and he made his wingers better. His wingers, superstar to very high caliber star, right? I believe Nick Suzuki is that type of player. And going back to Nick's, I'm trying to remember what year it would have been, but anyhow, when I used to go to the gym that I used to belong to, where I lived in Quebec. There was a former scout of the Boston Bruins. And he was a scout at the time that they brought Patrice Bergeron into the organization. And he told me when the Canadians acquired Nick Suzuki, like shortly after he had been on the team and that, you know, people had got to know him a little bit, this scout told me that Nick totally reminded him of Patrice Bergeron at the same age when Bergeron had come into the Bruins organization in terms of his demeanor, his maturity, his commitment, his skill sets. Nick is more skilled than Patrice Bergeron was. You know, he's got better hands. Yeah. I'd say he's a better playmaker, but the defensive side of the game, which is the hardest part for a very offensively gifted player to learn, if he gets to that level, I don't think there's any debate about him being a sufficient number one center for the Montreal Canadiens, right? Because that they come in all shapes and sizes. It's just a question of it. You can look at any team and see and debates like a cup winning team. Okay, well, who's their number one center? Well, you got, you know, guys that have been parts of multiple winners in recent years, like Jonathan Toews and Andre Kopitar, those types of players, big, strong, rangy centers that are. The common element almost always is that they're really strong two-way centermen, right? So, I don't know. Let's see how the wings play out. I mean, Cole Caulfield has superstar potential. If he turns out to be a guy that's gains the zone, holds on to the puck, and, you know, makes it impossible for defenders to, you know, at the ozone time with Suzuki and Caulfield along there turns out to be a beast in and of itself. We just don't know. Right, there, a guy in and of itself doesn't become just that player. It's what he does with his line mates, his teammates, and what they do for him. Right, so
and also we have seen that his leadership qualities 100%. Are also there in regards to what Patrice Bergeron had along the way. I like the fact that we've heard that he's taking French lessons and mm-hmm. getting on and becoming that part of. Montreal that you need to be maybe as a first line center and definitely as a captain for the team.
Yeah, well, and living in the city full time, you know, two summers now, right? Well, maybe not last summer, but this summer, I think he's lived there full time. That's a strong statement and commitment on his part.
Very and playing positive street hockey with the kids,
right? Yeah.
That gets everyone going. It's been an absolute pleasure, John. I'm super excited. I hope I can get back to you maybe before a Winnipeg Jet game or something like that.
Sure.
I've always promised Murat the playoffs, but, you know, we can take a regular season game.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, let's not hang on the playoff thing there. We don't know what the Jets are going to be this season. So regular season sounds good.
Yeah. Well, it's been a year. It's been that year for me. I've done most of these pods myself. The support team, though, in Montreal has been superb. And as John hides behind his desk over there, I'm going to pop the champagne.
Oh,
because this is the final episode of the Top 25 Under 25. Thank you all for joining us. And thank you, John, for sticking with me this time. And I hope you have a great evening or afternoon with your missus.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Patrick. And thanks for having me on. Cheers. And congratulations on a terrific summer season.
Cheers.
Good. Take care.